Welcome to episode 20 of Comic Book Nation, the official podcast of comicbook.com. I am your host, Kofi Outlaw, and today, with me on the couch, our co-host, Matt.
What's up?
And today, we're bringing back our wrestling buddy, Connor's here.
What's going on, Kofi?
Not much. Well, actually, a lot. We have a lot to talk about today. We have a lot of new movie stuff to talk about, thanks to CinemaCon going on, and we're going to be talking about some wrestling today, which is why you two are here and excited, because there's a small event in wrestling happening this week.
Yeah, you probably never heard of it. It's called WrestleMania 35. It's a small little show, you know, little bingo hall.
Little house show, still trying to gain an audience. So we're going to help it out by talking a whole WrestleMania preview. But first, like I said, we have a bunch of new movie stuff to talk about, largely because CinemaCon is happening in Vegas right now. That's where you're going to find Brandon Davis out there doing his all-day cowboy stint for us, getting the scoops on all the hot new things coming to theaters soon. And we've already gotten some exciting things that we've seen, a lot of new footage that kind of debuted there for some highly anticipated films. And we're going to talk about a couple of them, starting with, you know, no pun intended, a dark horse film out of the bunch, which would be Terminator Dark Fate, a.k.a. Terminator 6. And we've only briefly talked about it on Comic Book Nation because there wasn't so much to talk about. We hardly know anything.
Yeah.
We know Arnold Schwarzenegger's coming back. Linda Hamilton's coming back. It's one of those long-awaited sequels that picks up right after T2 and kind of jettisons the rest of the franchise, if you care to remember it, from T3 to Terminator Salvation to Genesis. But during CinemaCon, we got the first look at the Terminator 6 footage, and we have a description provided to us by Brandon Davis, and I think we're all kind of in agreement here. It sounds at least pretty damn cool.
It sounds great. I read all of, two, three paragraphs of that description.
We'll take them through it real quick just so you guys can get a sense. So basically, if you haven't been keeping up with CinemaCon, what we heard from this kind of initial set of footage is that it starts in Mexico City and on a highway, and we get the scene where a mysterious kind of pivotal figure in this whole thing, who is Mackenzie Davis, the actress, who's been seen in the only few promo photos we've seen. She doesn't quite look like a Terminator, but she doesn't quite look like a human.
Yeah.
And we've been kind of wondering about that. But in this photo, she appears, does the whole naked thing when, you know, the Terminator time travel portal. And she appears in a stage, another scene where she kind of strips this guy down after saving them. This couple from police, she saves them, and then they're all like thankful, and she's like, "Ooh, don't thank me yet," and she steals the guy's clothes, and you know, classic Terminator stuff. But I think the key detail is that she's kind of referred to, at least by Brandon, as like an enhanced person, which is, I don't know quite yet what that means in the Terminator verse, but it sounds like some weird hybrid where now like humans are getting enhanced to battle Terminators or.
Well, and like in the photos, or in the few photos that they released from it, you can see like her shoulder has like this line.
Yeah.
It very much looks like a robotic split where like a cybernetic part would
in
go.
In the first promo photo of her, Linda Hamilton, and the young actress, I forget her name, Danny, I think she's called Danny Ramos or something in the film. And Mackenzie Davis has all these lines that look like they could pop open and be like cybernetic parts or weapons or crazy stuff, like something out of Alita Battle Angel. So this is our first kind of hint of that, which sounds like a very cool concept to me, because it's something like we never thought of. It's like there's been this human war versus machines, but eventually maybe the humans do take some machine to be able to battle machines, and that would be really cool to me as a Terminator fan to see. But it goes on, and we get like our first look at Gabriel Luna, who was in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as Ghost Rider. He's the MCU Ghost Rider now.
Really cool Ghost Rider.
Yeah, really cool Ghost Rider, Robbie Reyes. And he is the new Terminator, or at least one of the new Terminators in this film. And we get a scene with him at a car crash where it looks like he's coming after this Danny Ramos character, and Linda Hamilton's Sarah Connor shows up what is a pretty badass kind of callback scene to her now serving in the role that, like, the Arnold Schwarzenegger Terminator served for her in the first two films, where she pulls up, basically like lights up some Terminators, just dropping grenades and blasting off shotguns, and says like drops an "I'll be back" line.
And you she's know. Like run, like that whole thing of like run, like go now, and yeah. I've got this, like that. Yeah. If it looks half as cool as it sounds, like yeah. this is a great. It's gonna be an awesome scene.
Yeah, I think this is gonna be like a major comeback film for Linda Hamilton, is what it sounds yeah. like, which is well deserved because Sarah Connor is kind of like the badass center of this franchise, especially in T2. I mean, I'll never forget like seeing that in the arms and everything, you know. Yeah. So that sounded really cool. And yeah, she just comes out and she's taking on Terminator. She tells the girl to run. She says, "I'll be back," as she goes and tossing grenades and popping off shots and, you know, really lighting it up.
Now,
and
this footage did it not include Schwarzenegger? It didn't include him.
I don't see anything about him. I think they're kind of still keeping that,
which is pretty impressive,
under wraps.
That we're this excited for it, and like they didn't even touch him, right? They're like, no. Let's give you some of the new stuff, and then the one callback is Linda Hamilton. They're just like keeping that over here. Yeah. Whereas before, in every other campaign, right, we see him.
Yeah,
or
it's Arnold.
All pushed. No, so this is promising.
Yeah, there's a definite.
He apparently got the biggest pop when he showed up at CinemaCon, in the sense, because he came up and apparently went on a long rambling speech, but everyone went nuts for him.
Yeah, I mean, that's expected. Just having him walk in a room and people go nuts yeah. is great. If you don't let him talk, it's even better. Just turn it back around, send him out. You got the crowd hype. He's like, I've done
plus
my job.
Old Schwarzenegger as a Terminator isn't something new to this series.
No.
So it's probably smart of them to be like, hey, let's show you some other stuff
yeah,
that
exactly.
to bring you in.
And we don't know what role he's playing. I mean, he could be like an aged Terminator, like in Genesis, where he was Pops. He could be just a human dude that was the basis of the Terminators. Like, we don't know.
Oh, yeah.
And the only photos we've seen in some production video, he's like sitting outside of his house. He has a dog. He's drinking brews. He's sitting around with Linda Hamilton. And he just looks like an old survivalist almost, or something like that.
That would be a really interesting way to go.
Yeah.
If they do that.
Yeah. And like I said, so we don't know what his role is. We are still unsure about a lot of it, but this first footage sounds good. And I really kind of now want to see this first trailer. And I'm slowly, and I'm saying this slowly, becoming more optimistic about Terminator Dark Fate.
I mean, you were pretty enthusiastic about...
I like the title because I think it opens up the concept to, you know, this whole time travel and this idea that no fate but what we make it. And now it sounds depressing, like, yeah, we're headed for some really serious stuff and it's going to get dark. And I think that if they do it the right way, if it could tie into kind of today and, you know, our current dark timeline that we're all living in, and
very true.
Yeah, so that'll be great. So we're looking forward to more of that. You can read Brandon's full breakdown on the site. He did a good job of kind of covering it and then kind of really bringing the hype for this. We're gonna move on because we got a curious little tease that may not be anything but could be something, and it comes from none other than Fast and the Furious icon Vin Diesel, who showed up on the set of the Avatar sequels to take a selfie with James Cameron and kind of loosely promote himself without actually saying anything by saying, like, it's been a dream come true to work with this. It's been a dream come true to work with this guy. And it shows Jim Cameron, and they're making Men in Black jokes about how they're going to have to flash him and erase his memory. But there's a hint that Vin Diesel could be showing up in some of the Avatar sequels, which, you know, let's pause for a minute and just kind of lay this out, because it gets confusing every time I'm writing about this, because they approved Avatar 2, 3, 4, and 5. So far, what we know is that filming has wrapped on, I believe, 2 and 3. But then we started to get all these kind of new casting things that will presumably be for 4 and 5.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Like Edie Falco coming in. Like, it seems like 2 and 3 will still bring back Stephen Lang as Miles Quaritch or whatever his name was. It's been so long since I've seen
none of those movies. Names mattered.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of
Tanium, come on.
So, like, Stephen Lang's coming back, and he'll have a whole, it seems like, a whole trilogy to play out versus him versus Jake and, you know, Neytiri and all that. But then in 4, something new is, it's almost like a new chapter. And Edie Falco is going to be the new military commander of Sopranos and Nurse Jackie fame. And now it sounds like Vin Diesel may be involved in some way, too. And possibly for, you know, Avatar, like I said, this second installment of the story or second chapter, however they're doing it.
Right.
There's a lot of unknowns there. Like, are we going to actually see Vin Diesel, or is he doing the Groot thing and they just want to, you know, a motion capture character with a cool, like, you know, famous voice? We don't know. But we do know that if Vin Diesel does join Avatar, yeah, those projects are going to get a crazy marketing promotion boost because...
Yes, because he just commands...
Yeah, I mean, Vin Diesel promoting Vin Diesel is like a business in and of itself. And like whatever project he's attached
by to. Then, Bloodshot might have come out and rocked the world.
Oh, God, that's a thing. Man, that is a thing.
So
that's
maybe
a movie with people in it.
Yeah,
one of those
man,
people
Vin
is
Diesel.
Vin Diesel. Valiant, Bloodshot.
It's gonna change superhero films. That's what he said.
Oh man. Oh man. So maybe
I'm just quoting.
Yeah, no one will take them seriously ever again.
Or Vin
That's
Diesel's
how it
just
will change them.
Taking a page out of David Harbour's playbook and be like, if it sounds iffy, this movie you're leading, this comic book movie, you should probably start casting that next year.
The question is it going to be better or worse than Hellboy is the question now.
Bloodshot?
Yep.
It's an unknown. That's an unknown.
I'm gonna go. Oh God, that's hard. Because what I've seen from Hellboy, I would almost give it to Bloodshot because I haven't seen anything, and the stuff I've seen from Hellboy, it doesn't look great.
But yeah, we don't know anything. But like, yeah, I mean, David Harbour's already drawing Black Widow, even though Hellboy's about to open. So maybe Vin Diesel saw some at Bloodshot and was like, yeah. So Cameron,
Avatar.
It's Fast and Furious.
Gotta get that post group money.
That Hobbs and Shaw is looking like it's going to take some of my money. I need a new paycheck. So all right, we're going to keep you updated. But yeah, let us know what you think. Would you think would it change your opinion of Avatar at all if Vin Diesel's in it? Let us know. We're going to move on because there's a curious little thing that came out of CinemaCon, a little mystery afoot. And that is Disney is putting up dates of release for New Mutants, the X-Men movie that the world forgot about because Professor X erased our minds or just because it kind of went through all these crazy production woes. I mean, yeah, if you haven't been keeping up, the X-Men movies have been trying to release two more installments for the last 2 years and failing to do so, which is the New Mutants, which was about, you know, a young group of mutants who were basically all have like some kind of trauma or mental issue that lands them in this kind of asylum and is a very horror themed kind of thing. It's adapting the Demon Bear storyline, which is about a demonic presence haunting, you know, Danny Moonstar. Mm. And that was going to be kind of this X-Men meets horror film that everybody was real excited about. They did all the marketing promotion. They did a trailer and then it disappeared.
The trailer looked great.
So long ago.
So long ago, right? Like years.
And what's crazy is that movie was all but done.
Yeah.
Like, that's the crazy part.
No, they did a cut of it, and they did it, and it was not. And then when they realized, oh, this whole superheroes meets horror thing is every big box office film right now doubled up. Like, let's push more of the horror angle. Yeah. And then somewhere in there, I don't know what happened, but something started to get messy or lost, and New Mutants has just been in limbo. But now at CinemaCon, there's marketing for it, there's a date for it. But we still have no idea or confirmation that it's going to be a theatrical release. There's been talk that it could be hitting Disney Plus or other streaming services or would get some other kind of release. But, you know, to be promoting it at CinemaCon and adding dates to it seems
odd if they were just going to push it on the streaming
service. If it was just going to be a streaming service. So maybe in August we will actually get New Mutants. I would like to see that happen because, like we said, like, we saw this trailer years ago, and a year and a half.
It was right about a year ago.
Yeah. And we were kind of like, and we were in for it. And like, we were ready for that. So,
can we get this instead of Dark Phoenix?
I would take it instead of Dark Phoenix. That's just me. I know that's an unpopular opinion with, like, if Jamie Lovett's listening to this, he's like throwing the computer at the wall. He just wants to finish his X-Men universe and move on.
And after yesterday. And the Spider-Man fiasco, we don't need this.
Yeah, after arguing about Spider-Man. About Spider-Man reboots and stuff, I know he's not trying to hear this. But yeah, we'll see. We'll keep you updated as always. But I personally want to see New Mutants. It sounds like Connor does. Matt's meh.
I wasn't sold on the original trailer. I was fine. I was like, okay, I get doing a different thing, and that's cool. That's not necessarily the New Mutants I wanted, so I'm cool. I'm just like, hey. But I do still, if you have a finished project like that, I want it to come out. Like, yeah. I want it to hit a theater.
I think for me, I just want to finish up this X-Men universe clean. Like, I just want to do it clean. End of the story. Let's move on.
Because if you peddle it to, like, a streaming service, it's going to get not near the attention. It's going to, like, I don't know. I just feel like that's a disservice to it.
Yeah. And if you do that, what happens if it's great?
Yeah, right? And then it's just like, oh, well, hope you like that because we're not doing that again.
Then you've lost.
I mean, yeah. So,
yeah.
We'll keep you updated on what's going on with that, but New Mutants, keep your eyes peeled. All right, stay tuned, because when we come back, we are going to deep dive into that Joker trailer, and these guys are going to set us up for WrestleMania 35.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
All right, so let's talk about the thing that I'm actually on the couch for today.
A movie that is definitely coming out.
Yeah, and a movie that is definitely coming out.
Confirmed.
Confirmed.
Now go ahead.
Yes, that is Todd Phillips's Joker, which stars Joaquin Phoenix as the Joker in this DC standalone kind of Elseworlds style movie, which kind of examines how a man named Arthur Fleck goes through this slow descent into madness and ends up as the Joker. So we got this new first trailer for it, and we've all been kind of really wondering about it. And yeah, I mean, it's safe to say that this was unlike any comic book movie trailer we've probably ever seen, right? Like, none of the usual staples. This is very much, I mean, if you had told me this was like a Focus Features art house,
yeah, very much that
movie
vibe.
Kind of independent movie, like, yeah, very much that vibe, right?
Mm-hmm. Even when the makeup hits and you start to see that, even then, like when he's on the stairs, and like there's so many weird little touches to this. Yes, definitely thought it had a very indie, when the thing popped up, like I would have seen like Sundance. It's like, oh, hey, we showed this and this won all these awards or whatever, fund us.
Official Sundance selection 2019. Yeah, whatever. Right? Yeah, so we saw Joker, and I guess we'll go through and just kind of give our opinions about it. I'm a little triggered about this one because I really did like the trailer, and I'm interested in the concept, but I think it's the reactions that I've seen, especially on social media, which, you know, you always got to take with a huge grain of salt, Ambien, and some alcohol, but, like, you gotta...
It just got real dark.
Like, you really gotta... I mean, people are just freaking out, and they're freaking out about the most pedantic crap about it. Like, it's not Jared Leto. It's become a big thing out of this. Somehow this has inspired a whole Leto was the greatest or great movement.
Revisionist history?
Yeah, a lot of... That's the exact term I've been using. A lot of revisionist history. Leto's now great. The Killing Joke is now stupid. Heath Ledger is like the only... Heath Ledger's Joker is, you know, the force of nature Joker is the only way we can ever go with this character. Oh, yeah. Like, all of these things you're going to hear multiplied in internet stupidity over and over again.
Put it right up there with the Snyder Cut.
I was going to say, it's BVS all over again.
Yeah,
Justice League came out, and all of a sudden the Snyder universe and the Snyder Cut was this gold mine, even though everyone...
Oh, hold on, because Kofi really likes that universe.
I mean, I really love the Snyder.
I'm saying, though, that was not the case when that came out.
No,
there was a lot of people that were like, this is crap on a plate.
No, Zack Snyder got sanctified after Justice League for some reason. I mean, I was riding with Man of Steel and the ultimate cut of Batman vs. Superman, and I think the ultimate cut of Batman vs. Superman is why I like Joker.
Okay.
And I'm kind of in the process of just getting these thoughts out into an editorial, but Batman vs. Superman, if you watch the ultimate cut, and there's an article we have on the site called Why Batman and Superman is Smarter Than You Think, and it's where I just did this like multi-thousand word breakdown of how that film is like a social allegory for politics and society and post 9/11 America and everything that was happening, you know, where Batman is this kind of militaristic post 9/11 law, you know, screw, you know, we got to give up freedoms for security type deal. Superman's this kind of old, you know, nostalgic, almost liberal kind of way of thinking, and the movie kind of clashes these two political ideas literally together.
Yeah.
And then has them strike, kind of eliminates the kind of otherness that they're feeling by making not a political, but like a personal connection with the mm-hmm. whole Martha moment, which no matter what version of the movie it in falls flat on its face. But the
but we got where it was going.
Yeah, we got where it was going. And so Joker is exciting to me because I think people are underestimating what you can do. This isn't a comic book movie, right? Yeah. So you don't have to worry about continuity, if it's in the DCEU or not, or how it syncs up to Jared Leto's Joker or whatever. Like, none of that's important. This isn't about, like, the Joker who's in a universe with Batman and doing all this battle. This is taking a character who is a worldwide icon, the arguably most iconic superhero comic book villain, and using that iconography to say something about society and life and what it can do in almost this Taxi Driver, Scorsese kind of way. And I think the Joker is just the end product, but not the point of the film.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which is just kind of a dark reflection of how certain aspects, and I think it's not a mistake that this is set in 1980s, almost America, mm-hmm. where there's all these things that I wrote down, just things from the 80s, like releasing, you know, we stopped caring for the mentally ill and put them out on the streets. Gordon Gekko, greed is good culture became, you know, the culture under Reagan and all this stuff. Urban America began to become like, you know, a war zone and hellhole with the crack epidemic and all that stuff. And all of these other elements, the threat of destruction from the Cold War and what psychological effects. Not only these are these historical things, but these are important factors that shaped some of the most iconic Batman stories mm-hmm. out of that. Namely, like The Killing Joke, The Dark Knight Returns. Taking those two Batman stories, which were hugely influenced by, like I said, the socio-political realities of the time.
And are now crap.
Now people are telling us are crap. Or just crap because revisionist history, right?
But can I ask a question, though?
Yeah.
There's a weird kind of underlying tone in this that feels to involve body horror in a way.
Exactly, yeah.
Like, are we expecting this to be... I know we're expecting it to be dark-ish, but, like, are we expecting horror tinges to it?
Yeah, I'm expecting, like, almost... I can't say for sure, but when I watched the trailer, at first I was only like, eh. But then I started, me and Matt talked about this, like, you watch Joaquin Phoenix's performance in the scenes, and which scenes do they select for the trailer? And each scene is a scene where you can look at it two different ways. Almost. And it's kind of like a smiling on the outside, mm-hmm. crying on the inside type of dichotomy, right? I mean, we talked about like the one with Francis Conroy who plays his mother and she's in the bath and he's pouring the water over her head. At first, it looks playful and happy. And then you watch it a few times and you watch Phoenix and it's like there's this subtle hint of menace throughout
all of it.
And they use it the fact that you know who the Joker is, what he is, and what he's capable of. As the kind of unspoken menace of this trailer. Like, so this guy sitting, if you see Arthur Fleck sitting with a woman and pouring in a bathtub, pouring water over her head, you know, it looks playful. If you start to think this is the Joker sitting over somebody in a bathtub, you know, playing with them, you're like,
I almost got the sense that like that scene is him actually killing his mother.
Exactly. Well, like how long before he drowns her?
Yeah. The dancing scene has that same creepy vibe, right? Because you've seen in other books and other media, Joker doing that kind of playful, I'm going to dance with you and whatever. And then you just look at his face and it's just, you know who he is. That does inform your opinion. Yeah, absolutely.
And every scene in the trailer is him just simmering, boiling, building. He's on the elevator with a mental patient and he's clenching his fist and he's just sitting there. He's talking to Brian Tyree Henry's orderly at Arkham State Hospital and he's just, and the dude's, and Brian Tyree Henry's looking at him like, you look crazy AF. And he's just like, what?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like one word.
Yeah.
He says one word, but it's so, like, that's, I mean, that's props to Joaquin too. That's props to the direction. I mean, there's a lot of really cool stuff going on.
Yeah, and you can see how, like, that scene where he's just twirling in a bathroom and there's blood under his chin, like, you can see how that could have come right after some horrific murder scene.
Yeah.
Like, and this is what I'm in for, and I hope it goes there. Like, I hope that when the – and this is a Todd Phillips thing to do. Like, if you've ever seen some of his works, like, yeah, he can build it up, and then the wheels really – it goes really to crazy town. And I hope this really does go to kind of like seven-ish serial killer crazy town.
Well, and like you guys were talking about, like there's like three spots in this trailer that it could. Like you can see like, okay, I can literally in my head see right after that scene, he like decapitates someone or he puts like, you know what I mean? Like he just goes to town. You can see those little hints exactly. throughout multiple times. I hope he delivers.
I gotta say, I love the taxi driver reference because I think one aspect of this movie that they're really going to dive into is how does a character become this way in the world that they're in? Like we talk about the Killing Joke. That was about one character having a particularly bad day and seeing just how far he can be driven. This one is an entire lifetime of living in a certain world that shapes you into this madness.
Yeah.
And I think the world is going to play just as big of a character as the players we're seeing on screen.
And like I like what you mentioned because a lot of people pointed out, like Jim said, the body horror aspect, the Cronenberg stuff, like not quite Cronenberg, but like because Heath Ledger's Joker did play with this idea too, right? Mm-hmm. Of like the white makeup being like the rot, and like he's kind of rotting, his yellow teeth, like all of that, he kind of incorporated his body. And it's almost like in this, if you look at him, like the way he's straining, it's like the world's kind of like eating away at him, mm-hmm. like literally. And he's just kind of, I wouldn't be surprised if he got skinnier and just kind of like emaciated and just kind of gross looking and by the end and kind of crazy. So these are all very subtle things that I think for me, I would like to see that character study. I don't need Batman in this. Like,
so you're not liking the... like the whole, well, it doesn't have Batman, so it's not
Thomas Wayne, a very young Bruce. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I don't care. I mean,
with,
I don't care
with the most
that.
Ironic line in the whole thing about fighting.
Who would fight under a mask?
And that's a great line. Yeah, I love that.
I mean, it's like, a great line.
Yeah, that's a great line.
Exactly. Like, who would do this? Like, you know, hiding behind a mask, a cat.
Yeah, like yeah. It's like, oh, spot on. That's really well done. But that's all I need. Like, I don't even need that, but it's just nice to have, like, those little touches. But I agree with you as far as, like, I was one who early on was really bummed that DC for a minute in the books kind of stopped doing those Elseworlds stories. And those were opportunities for them to kind of explore these different aspects without having to worry about continuity, having to worry about, well, this person met this person a month ago, and so I gotta tether that. And now that the movies... whether it's because of their unfortunate start or like DC's kind of mishandling of things, now that they're kind of rolling with this, I think it's great. I think this is the way to really get out some of those iconic characters and really explore stuff in them. Yeah.
And I think like, yeah, the Joker can be a force of nature, but like, yeah, the Joker is the Joker before he meets Batman. Mm-hmm. That's an important thing that I feel like people forget. People always say like, well, you can't have the Joker if you don't have Batman. It's like, no, man. The Joker was somebody who stumbles across Batman and finds his favorite plaything in Batman.
Yeah.
Who finds completion when he does find Batman. Before that, he was still the Joker.
I think some of that is also the fault of the books at times. Because depending on... because like we talk about the fluidity of these things. Like any comic, different creative teams kind of take more of a... one wouldn't exist without the other. One, you know, because Batman
two halves of the same coin.
Yeah, and sometimes they push that agenda for a little bit, and then it goes back to kind of what it used to be, which is more this take of like one existed, and then saw the other one and went, "Ha ha! I finally have it's very much that."
Ironically, that's how Heath Ledger's Joker was. Mm-hmm. Like, if and I think that's like one of the hypocrisies. If this had been a Heath Ledger Joker origin story, like people would have been behind it.
Oh yeah,
probably.
Like they'd have been like, oh, that's awesome. I also want to point out that, like, can we just say for the record, too, that the Joker has had one of the most beloved and embraced Jokers was Jack Nicholson.
Yep.
I was going to bring that up. Definitely had an origin story.
Yeah. Yes.
So we've already seen a Batman Joker origin story, and not only did it not fall apart, but it became people's favorite Joker until Heath Ledger came along.
And even then... They crapped all over it for
exactly.
I don't know how long.
Yeah. And we were back in the same situation where Heath Ledger's Joker came along and we were back having the same conversation we are having right now. People saying, oh, this isn't the Joker, blah, blah, blah. This is just crap. It's going to fail. And now it's just, once that history is behind us, let's revise it. And now it's just Heath Ledger's Joker is the greatest Joker ever. And
this will go
on. Some people saying, like, he's rolling in his grave. You shouldn't even attempt this.
Oh, good
like,
God.
Heath Ledger and Joaquin Phoenix were contemporaries. They were friends. Mm-hmm. They were both courting kind of, you know, Oscars in the early 2000s together. Like, these guys respected each other. Mm-hmm. So I don't think Heath Ledger would be mad about this.
No.
And like I said in an article or on Twitter, like, in fact, I think even me being like, damn, I wish I could have like had the chance to work like this material too, like, and do that. So I'm behind Joker myself. I think if there's any fair criticism, it's that Todd Phillips himself can be inconsistent. So making sure that this film carries what we saw in the trailer all the way throughout is a question mark. But as far as the concept, like, I'm good with it and I want to see more. And I definitely want to see this. And let's be honest, I think a lot of these people who are hating right now will be in those.
They'll be buying their tickets.
Yeah.
They'll be kidding themselves. They'll be buying their tickets.
So, yeah, absolutely. I'm down for this. I was curious about it when they announced it, and I've kind of like set it on the back burner, like, we'll kind of see if that actually happens, especially with DC and stuff. And once we started to get more castings and details, like, I'm really like curious too to see like Mark Maron's part in this. Yeah. Like, there's some other characters that
there's just so many weird, like, really small, like, not small parts, but with like good actors. Mark Maron, Shea Whigham, who's like from a bunch of stuff. I can't even remember Boardwalk Empire, a bunch of other stuff. Yeah, Zazie Beetz.
Yeah,
you know, as
Domino, kinda,
and I feel like that scene of him with the flowers at the end is like her apartment, and I feel like it's going to end really badly for her.
Yeah,
and that scene of him dancing down the stairs at the end might be something.
I love that scene so
after
much.
After that, and yeah, but all right. So if you want to know about Joker, we have it up on the site. Come discuss. Let us know your feelings. And we are going to move on and be talking about some wrestling. Connor, Matt, tell us about this little festival that's happening in wrestling this weekend.
Well, WrestleMania 35 is this Sunday at MetLife Stadium. It's got 500 matches, and we're going to break down all of them.
That was just for you.
Thank you. There it is. We're going to break down all of them. No, I'm just kidding. We're just going to talk about a couple. So there are so many matches going on this weekend.
Yeah.
But let's talk about what... what overperforms? What
Let's
steals
talk
the
about
whole
Kofi.
Week? That, you know, you say that, but that's
going to be the Cinderella story of the weekend.
Yeah.
That's actually my answer. Is I think the Daniel Bryan Kofi match, for as high as the expectations are, I think it breaks him.
Really?
Think, because we haven't talked, nobody's been talking about just how good Daniel Bryan has been as a heel. Like, you go back and watch that Fastlane match, even though the booking made no sense, that's a match of the year contender out of nowhere. The guy barely wrestles on SmackDown anymore, so we don't really talk about it. But the dude has just been absolutely perfect as this vicious heel when he breaks out those stomps. He's got the black trunks and boots. A lot of the flair is gone, but the intensity is all still there. And you match that with Kofi, who is sitting right over here and has been putting on his absolute best work.
Yes, I have.
In his 11-year career
in
business.
That works. The League of Kofis has been doing that.
And I'll say this. I've been going through a lot of old WrestleMania pre-match promos, and I keep running into that Daniel Bryan monster one from 30. If the pre-match promo for this doesn't beat that in terms of hype, someone has messed up because you have so much material to work with. You've got a decade's worth. If that doesn't start with, oh, by the way, I was this goofy Jamaican guy for a few years, and no one took me seriously. Leading all the way up to this, there's an incredible story you can just tell in about a four-minute video right there. That alone, I think, is going to be a highlight of the weekend.
Wow. Okay.
What else? What else do we got that's big? What should we be like looking out for?
So,
the Raw tag team titles, obviously.
You know it, bro.
Well, okay. So the other big match before I get to my pick would be, and this is one I almost put here, but I don't think it will overperform. I think it will meet all my expectations, is the big main event between Ronda Rousey, Becky Lynch, and Charlotte Flair for two titles now, because they weren't content with one.
That's like been your jam this whole time.
It is. And the only reason I'll put it here is because I think it will be as good as I'm imagining. I don't know if it'll like surpass that. Like, it would have to do something pretty kind of out, because I already expect a lot. I already have it on a pretty high pedestal. So I think it's going to be great. They've already delivered in their promos and their matches together. I think this is just going to be, it's going to be great. And I think, I hope, well, you know what? I'll hold that for a later topic, because that feeds into another thing we're going to talk about a little bit.
Alrighty. Now, what do you think is the biggest letdown of the night?
Okay.
Any one of the battle royals?
No,
that's pre-show. It doesn't count.
I think it's this pains me. I think it's going to be Triple H and Batista.
That was my
pick.
That was my
pick. The only letdown. Hold on a second.
Producer
the only reason that's going to be a letdown is because Batista is not going to win. We know it's he's not.
It was producer James Viscardi's birthday. It was James Viscardi's birthday. Don't take this away from him.
So that's not the letdown.
But yeah, have you watched any of Triple H's last 2 years of matches?
Yeah.
They've almost all of them have been boring as sin. Or just flat out bad.
But I think it's because Triple H over the last 2 years has had fairly bad opponents in the sense that his last two opponents have been fairly slow.
Seth?
The style in which that they wrestled in both those matches was slow. And I don't know if that's especially with the Seth one, I don't know if that was because of Triple H or if that was because of Seth, but it didn't move.
Is it because these are old ass men we are talking about?
Here's why it's going to disappoint.
One with a recovered pectoral muscle.
Here's why it's going to disappoint. People are going to be rooting for Batista. He's not going to win.
Yes.
Triple H loves to have these matches, not necessarily be slow, but long and drawn out. He loves the pace to build. And this is a no holds barred match. This shouldn't go more than 15 minutes. It's gonna get about 25, and we're gonna be like, okay, we're sick of this, and you gave it to the guy we didn't want.
Also, this is not peak Batista either.
No, he hasn't wrestled in 5 years.
We don't know that. We don't know that.
Almost every wrestler, it is always a surprise when they come out and we go, oh, hey, they actually look like this.
Here's what I think is going to happen. We're either going to get, Batista is going to either.
He's not going
to
win.
Listen, but here's the thing. He's either going to destroy Triple H during the match.
God, I wish.
And
that would be good.
Either Randy Orton and Ric Flair will come out or DX will come out. And bail Triple H.
So Sting.
So it'll be Sting
over again.
Even though he
and that went so well.
Did not put Sting over.
Right.
And that was so sad to watch all these old men run down the ramp.
Are you kidding me? You didn't like DX versus NWO?
No. Because wait for my walker.
And no one bothered.
My knees. Don't go that low.
Nobody bothered to address. It's like, hey, X-Pac, you were with both of us. Are you going to address this? No.
Double agent. I want it to be great. I just have this feeling that, especially after that Saudi Arabia match with Triple H and Shawn Michaels,
what's funny is he was in the best shape of all four of those guys,
and
he's the one that gets hurt.
Yeah, so I'm very cautious, and that's saying something when Kurt Angle versus Baron Corbin is on the match.
Stinker of
it's gonna be terrible.
What's Kurt Angle doing?
Angle is doing his farewell match against Baron Corbin, even though most people think like something will happen to Corbin and someone else will come in.
Maybe. And Jack Snodgrass worships the ground he walks on.
Yeah. So if we just take it as is, Kurt Angle's big farewell will be a match against Baron Corbin. Mm. Kurt Angle has looked rough in recent matches anyway.
Here's a glimmer of hope. John Cena announced today at CinemaCon that he is done filming that firefighter movie that he's doing.
Shave his head.
Shot that John Cena shows up and wrestles Kurt Angle.
But if he shows up, how will we know that he's there?
Even if he does, though, it's not going to be the best match because Angle is just not what
Angle
he
is
used to.
So he's just he can't move. He's very
but scared. It will be 10 times better than Kurt.
I am a giant Kurt Angle.
Yes,
right. But like, I want to see. It has to be John Cena to be the one to send him out. It can't be.
And it's a perfect tie into his debut.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. It's got to come full circle.
Now, if they really want to get smart with it, he'll come out to Word Life. He'll come out in the old school rap getup.
No,
say, ruthless
not even
aggression.
That. He'll come out in his prototype tights.
Okay, tights. That never looked right.
So that brings us to which of the big three, because there are three main matches, right?
Well, there's three, like,
babyface
pushes. There's three, like, if all of these three matches go a certain way, if it's, you know, the Universal title match, WWE championship match, and the main event. If all the baby faces win those, people will say this is the greatest card ever. But this is a Vince McMahon produced card, so at least one of those guys isn't walking out without a title. Isn't winning at the end of the night.
Brock Lesnar is winning WrestleMania.
So between Rollins, Kingston, and Lynch, who's getting screwed?
Rollins. Easily. He's the one who can get screwed and still be okay.
Yes.
right? Like, because there's been no true buildup to the Brock and Seth thing. It's just, it's a match that's happening. No one really kind of cares about it because everyone kind of expects Brock to win. And I can't, honestly, there's been no hint that Seth has a chance at winning this thing.
But here's the thing. That's why, though.
But
like,
I don't
your
think,
description
but I think
just seems like that's a huge swerve if they do it. If they push it, that's
I wouldn't even be surprised if that is the third to last match. Like, yeah. Like that's not even,
that's
like,
probably midway in the show.
Yeah, it's probably going to be midway in the show. And that is probably how you will know Seth loses.
I go with it being Rollins also only because there's a laziness to the WWE when it comes to Brock. When Roman went out with leukemia, they had an option between, hey, we can build up a new guy in Braun Strowman, who if they had given him the title at Crown Jewel, I'd say he'd still be champion right now.
Yeah, yes.
Probably would be. Instead, they went with the easy route and said, let's give back to Brock, keep him off TV. We've got other people that can, you know, carry the show for a while until we need him again. I will say, though, Seth has looked so good this last year and a half or so.
And Lesnar's got his fight coming up, right?
It just sucks.
Doesn't matter.
He does have a fight coming up, but they've always been hinting at the, well, what if he walks out there and he's got the WWE belt?
He could always drop it Monday night. He could drop it Monday
night. But I hate that. I hate that.
Because there's always a big thing that happens.
I know, but I don't. Okay, so here's my
point. Okay, does Seth really need a WrestleMania win?
No,
he doesn't.
Bulletproof.
That's what I mean. I've been slipping.
Woo!
He does not need. He doesn't need a WrestleMania win. Becky needs the win, and Kofi needs the win.
I need a win.
Kofi absolutely needs the win.
Now here's the thing. I kind of came around because you had a theory.
Which one?
About Kofi Kingston.
Oh, God, yes.
And you kind of sort of put that worm in my brain, and now I haven't been able to get it out. And so if...
No, what?
Okay, so...
So here's the theory.
Give me Star Trek 2.
So here's the theory. So Kofi Kingston has this long gauntlet match where if he beats five guys in a row, he's got a title shot. He does it. Vince comes out and says, you got one more guy because I'm a prick, and it's Daniel Bryan. And he loses, and we're thinking, okay, he's going to hold SmackDown hostage next week to try and fix things. And then it comes out next week and it's Xavier Woods and Big E, and instead they go, Big E right there.
Why do you have him in your pocket?
He's right here. He's got a little unicorn.
Let Connor finish.
All right, so they come out and they're like, you know what? We're all going to quit because this is exactly how high we know we can get, and you're not letting us go any higher. And Vince says, you know what? If you two win a gauntlet tag team match, then Kofi gets the spot. They go through hell, and they end up winning it for him.
So that's how he's in this spot.
So this long story for Kingston's road to finally getting a one-on-one shot, he didn't even get.
And if they swerve and they have Brian beat him,
then Xavier and Big E, who said, look, we were about to put our careers on the line for you. We gave you the shot in the Elimination Chamber over one of us in the first place. We have moved heaven and earth to try to get you to this spot, and you kept failing.
Oh, and so they break split. Up the New Day.
So here's just to be different from you two, because there was a part of me that does unfortunately think Rollins could lose, even though I don't want that to be case because I'm so sick of Brock Lesnar. That's why I didn't bring his pop. Screw that guy. So I'm tired of Brock being the same matches over and over and over. So as a opposition pick, I will say Kofi.
All right.
Loses as a big old middle finger.
See, I was going to say, WWE if anything, audience. That match becomes like a random handicap or triple threat match.
Something happens to where he doesn't walk away the clean, I pin Brian, I get my WrestleMania championship
moment. That would be
moment.
An Undertaker losing level surprise.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Though that's just a theory. I think they do give it to Kofi. when it comes to the main event,
if that does happen, you heard it here first.
And there you go. If anything happens in the main event, I think it's Ronda somehow walks away with both titles and becomes the Brock of the division.
I will lose
Ronda
my
Rousey?
Mind.
Oh, you're not the Ronda Rousey train?
Not when she's against Becky Lynch.
Fan.
No, Becky Lynch better be walking out of that thing with both belts.
I can see Charlotte winning that match.
Because she better Charlotte. Not. Although I will say this.
I want to see it happen just to see Mackie.
I am so going to be so pissed.
I think having Charlotte win the SmackDown title was the biggest indication that they didn't have full confidence in this match. Because a day
somehow
after you announce that they've got the main event spot, Vince goes on Tuesday afternoon, he goes, shoot, this thing needs more hype. give Charlotte the SmackDown title.
And we'll have screw a, over we'll have
it
be Oscar.
A winner take all thing. It's like, are you going to put the tag titles in this too? So someone just has four belts walking
It'd
around.
It'd be really
like,
interesting to close. See if they do away with the brand split and they start consolidating some stuff.
Now, if that's the case, that would be interesting too. But I don't. That seems to be more a Raw thing. The night after, I don't think they're going to do that here. There's too much already.
We're getting a shakeup, and they'll probably do something when we get closer to the Fox deal and SmackDown. So, last question I got for you.
Well, hold on. I'm going to sneak one more thing in, only because I didn't see your things. Sure. Does it, Finn Balor's bringing back the demon, and nobody cares, right?
I care.
The entrance would be great.
Nobody cares.
Nothing else.
That match, it's good against Bobby Lashley.
That match would take 3 minutes.
Right. Does he win?
I care. Yeah. I care about that.
Dude, he's hooked into this Finn thing.
Like, dude, I can't.
For like the next
but
year.
But it's Bobby Lashley.
You made some big like, proclamations on this podcast.
He might as well be wrestling a cardboard cutout. That's how interesting it is. Jesus.
Bobby Lashley was almost was carrying the WWE for a little while.
And what happened? Now he's patting his rear to the audience. He's got Leo
Show
Rush running around.
Pose.
Jesus. All right. So, I have a Bobby Lashley shirt. Okay, I'm not opposed to Bobby Lashley.
We're into true confessions at this point.
Goodness.
Connor, what's your last question?
The last question is, WrestleMania is never just WrestleMania. There is an entire weekend of shows. As we are recording this, there are already shows happening in New York City right now. So my question to you is, of all the shows that are going on, what is the match of the weekend?
Oh, la, 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 la. You know what? Why don't you go first? Because I actually am still trying to – I'm debating between two.
It kind of has to be Adam Cole versus Johnny Gargano at NXT TakeOver.
Oh, my God. I'm surprised.
Because here's the thing. There's no there's no way this match
one of, you're,
ends.
You're one of those guys.
Here's the thing.
Look at the judginess.
No matter what happens
– Who's a secret wrestling snob?
No matter what happens, the fans win. Because if Gargano wins, it's the culmination of a years-long story.
Right.
If Cole wins – it gives the most popular faction in the developmental brand the top title. Either
like
way.
Match of the weekend?
Yeah. And it's a 2 out of 3 falls, so they're going to give those guys plenty of time. Velveteen Dream and Matt Riddle is a close second, though. And so is Naito and Ibushi at the Garden.
So your top three matches aren't even taking place on the main show?
Nope.
All right, so I'm going to say one. I'm going to get hate.
I gave you three.
So you did give me three. I swear to God. Look, I'll take two then.
If you go with the main event, I swear to
I'll
God.
I'll take two then. No. I wasn't going with that. I think from a pure wrestling, like, man, that was a great match. And it comes out of nowhere because the buildup has been less than stellar. AJ Styles versus Randy Orton.
Oh, my God.
Could be a great match.
Are you kidding me?
That
the most boring wrestler of all time
match.
Against the
not
against
compared to
Randy
Bobby
Orton's
Lashley.
Against
no
Randy Orton's six moves of doom.
He's got six whole moves of doom. I don't have one move.
What's the second one?
Second one is the main event because Connor's going to yell at me.
And so we come to an unceremonious end to a great wrestling discussion. WrestleMania 35 this weekend. After this, which was unexpectedly fun for me even, we are definitely bringing like the three of you back next week after this is over to see like... You know what?
So I get raked over the coals.
About how Triple H and Batista stole the show. It's
yeah.
God.
All right. That'll do it for this episode of Comic Book Nation. If you want to ride with us and you aren't already, we put up new episodes on comicbook.com every Wednesday, every Friday, where you can subscribe to our RSS feed or you can subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Google Podcasts.
Yep.
Yes, Google Podcasts. Ooh. Where you can find us on any one of those things that you listen to, but sorry for you Amazon Music people, we're still not there yet, buddy. But maybe one day.
I'll say all of the t-shirts have been mailed out today.
Ooh. Okay. All right. That's a good update.
T-shirts are in the
mail. We've been reading everybody's reviews. If you guys leave us a good review on any of those platforms, and we every week or so we read some reviews, you get a free comic book t-shirt, and we have made sure they are all out in the mail. We had some shipping issues, but they are solved. So you guys should all be getting your t-shirts if we've read your reviews. And if you would like some comic book swag, make sure you go to any one of those platforms and leave us a good review so that we can read it and get it to you. If you want to continue any of the discussion you heard today, you can find us on Twitter at the hashtag Comic Book Nation. And you can find us individually on Twitter. I'm at
So close.
I am at Matt Mueller CB.
Connor Casey _CB.
And Jim Viscardi, you want to drop yours?
Jim Viscardi, said a lot of folks, crazy wrestling Jim Viscardi. Things. Woo, woo, woo.
Oh, God.
Okay. I thought we were at an unceremonious end before. But here we are. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time on Comic Book Nation.